Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Middleton, and you see that guy over there?
Hello.
That is Bill Schaefer. Welcome back to Growing Bolder, the show that proves every week it's never too late to create the life that you want.
Oh, and this is going to be a great week, Mark, because on today's show, the master motivator, an 80-year-old, four-time Olympic coach who is still attracting the top athletes in the world. Plus, the musical genius who pushed the boundaries of rock and has been called America's Mozart.
Plus, a lesson on the power of persistence, what one of the world's greatest track and field stars did when her hip gave out, all of that and more today on Growing Bolder.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. For more than 35 years, he's helped men and women lose an estimated, are you ready for this, 12 million pounds in that time.
Man, he was the guy, when you think about it, who really began working with the morbidly obese, giving them hope. And you could make the point, Bill, and I think few would argue, that he laid the foundation for The Biggest Loser, Extreme Weight Loss, all of the other popular TV shows, and even his Sweatin' to the Oldies was the beginning of dance aerobics. Let's welcome the icon, the legendary, the one and only Richard Simmons. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby, dance with Mark and Bill and me. Come on, baby, dance with Mark and Bill and me. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, Richard, I'm going to say it right here on the air. When we're done with the interview, hang on, because we need you to do a little promo for us, okay?
What?
That's amazing.
I haven't even done the interview, and then the RU one is another thing.
You've passed the audition.
No,
you're in.
Seriously. I mean, I didn't get a T-shirt. I didn't get socks or a hat.
It's all...
know, usually when I do a radio show, you know, they'll say, "What, you know, before you go on, let's send you a hat or a T-shirt.
Let's do that.
Or maybe a pencil with their name." And you know what? I got nothing.
You didn't get it yet. Check your mail today.
I got nothing. I got nothing.
All right. First of all, congratulations. Thank you for doing what you do. While other media personalities have come and gone, man, you are still right there. You continue
to... Well, you know why? I think it's because I never lied to anybody. You know, over the years, there's people saying it's easy, it's quick, you know, drink this, do this. And I've never lied to people. I began my life as an overweight child in New Orleans and an obese teenager. And at 268 pounds, I tried many ways to lose weight because I thought that people would like me better if I was thinner, and I took laxatives and threw up and starved and almost lost my health. And so, you know, you have to get to the point of, do I want to live or do I want to die? I mean, it's like that serious. And every day I caught people who were overweight and obese, and a lot of people are having struggles. You know, they were abused as kids, or they went to an orphanage, or they felt unloved, or they had trauma. And let's face it, food is just so healing.
Richard, when we listen to you, you went from laughing and then in tears. You wear your emotions.
Well, it's very, you know, even though I am a clown, and I certainly admit that, you know, my work is very serious. You know, I call people. I still have my exercise studio called Slimmins, and I travel around the world. I just came back from Brazil in a little town called Capinas, and they had an orphanage, and they had contaminated water, and, you know, I built them a well. Mm. And I try to do things for orphans and for seniors and for teenagers, because we're living in a world that's very unhappy with people who have very low self-worth, and that's why God made me. So that I could, you know, I could make people laugh, but yet I can make them think, and, you know, that's really important to me.
You know, Richard, one of the reasons we wanted you on this program, other than the fact that you are genuine, you don't lie, and that you are one really cool dude, is that we like to say here at Growing Bolder that we have three products: hope, inspiration, and possibility. And
you know, I have an infomercial called Project Hope, and so one of my sayings is, with hope, you can cope. And a lot of people, you know, don't like going and going to work in the morning or going home or looking in the mirror. And I think it has to get to the part where you look in the mirror and you just thank God you're alive and that God gave you another day. And then you have to make a list of the people that love you. And then each day you have to give yourself compliments in the mirror. I mean, this is all the process of, you know, finding self-worth.
Well, thank you for mentioning Project Hope, because that's actually where I was going with that. The Hope, Project Hope, Hope in your instance is an acronym for Health, Optimism, Passion, and Energy. Tell us why and how this program works.
Well, because it's you know, I created something called Deal a Meal, and then that progressed into the Food Mover, and now my Food Mover is electronic. And then I created a 90-day program of cardio, toning, and challenges. You know, a lot of people, as they get older, they don't balance well. They lose their balance and they break a hip. So what I do is I try, and I have 70 DVDs and videos, exercise, and I just try to do it safe, and my success stories keep their weight off, which is, you know, really very important.
You set the world on fire, Richard, in your 20s and 30s, and here we are, still going strong. You've got the same energy you always had, and we spent a lot of time on our program.
That's because I do bun squeezes in
Whoa,
the morning.
Hey, TMI, Richard. TMI. Listen, we talk all the time about it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor
I'm 65 years old, and you know, I start my day with a little saying that goes, thank you, God, for this beautiful day, and I'll take care of me and others in a special way. And, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to face traffic. We have to go and maybe not really adore the people that we work with or not get respect there or not enough money. But, you know, you just have to embrace the day, you know, and you have to be loyal to yourself, because when you're loyal, you feel like a royal.
Hmm. All right. We've listened to your music video. We've talked about Project Hope. I mean, you are a guy of not only many talents, but many, many interests. Case in point, you've been designing custom jewelry for years. You now sell your own line called Sparkle. What's the collection all about?
Well, I designed, you know, when I was a kid, I would save up my allowance and I would design pieces of jewelry for my mother. And then for my mother's friends, and then for, you know, just people that mean the world to me. And so I took these designs, and I went to JTV, Jewelry Television, and I did them in stainless steel and bronze with gold overlays so that everyone could afford it, you know. So, you know, that's what I do.
Another one of the cool things you did, Richard, I think aside from helping people lose weight, you're the first person I can remember who made it okay to see people who are overweight going to a gym or working out. Because, you know, it used to be, oh, those are the people that you would snicker at if you saw them out jogging or running.
Yeah, you're right. You know, when I came to L.A., I had, it was 1973, I had never exercised before. I just simply had dieted. And so I, you know, decided to go to some studios. And everybody was thin, and it wasn't a lot of fun. So I got a job as a waiter, and people like Sidney Poitier, Henry Mancini, Johnny Carson, all of these really fabulous people, gave me tip money and said, we don't exactly know what you're going to do, but here's some money, and you decide what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And 39 years ago, I opened my exercise studio where I will teach tonight. And it will be filled with people from 16 to, I have a lady next to me named Jerry Sinclair. And Jerry is 91 years old and has been coming for 35 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to forgive yourself for gaining weight. You have to forgive yourself, and you have to move on. And you have to just try to be the best person that you can be.
Richard, if I may, and I'm asking you to work a little bit here. We've got you on. We've got all these listeners. I mean, you are the great Richard Simmons. Give us a pep talk, will you?
Well, here's what I want people to know. forgiveness is difficult. And you have been hurt. Maybe by people that you really thought loved you. But we have to move that away. And we have to know our self-worth and know how loved we are and know that we're good people. And you need to do charity work, whether it is going to a senior home or, you know, it's like right now everyone's making me little things so I could send to the orphanage. So there's a store there, and so we sell that stuff in the store. You have to know when you look in the mirror that you're worth it, that you're here. And, you know, whoever you believe in, whatever creator you believe in, that creator loves you. And you can't waste a day, a minute, a moment. You have to live your life and be the very best that you can be.
How cool to have a public figure out there, Mark, where his only goal is to make people feel better about themselves. It doesn't get any better than that, and whether Richard Simmons is your cup of tea or not, thank goodness he's out there paving the way for other people. Folks, if you want to know more about all of these projects he's talked about, and there are many of them, check them out at richardsimmons.com. Truly is one of the most innovative people of our time.
Coming up, Olympic hopefuls from around the world beat a path to his practice. Why an 80-year-old coach is still the hottest ticket around. This is Growing Bold.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Recently, Mark had the privilege of interviewing this awesome guy. He's an Olympic track and field coach, Brooks Johnson, probably the biggest in the world. He was on the Growing Boulder TV show. Now, Johnson has not only been one of the biggest names worldwide, he still is in what is very much a young man's game.
Our in-studio guest today is an icon, folks, a Hall of Fame track and field coach, in fact, one of the greatest coaches of all time. You'll meet him in just a second. Runners and hurdlers from all over the world come to train with Brooks Johnson, who will be 80 years old next year. Johnson is a master motivator who has not only coached four U.S. Olympic teams, he has coached an athlete in every Olympic since 1968. He is, as they say, the man. And his biggest name athlete these days is David Oliver, who recently won the world championship in Moscow in the 110-meter high hurdles. Oliver, third from the right in the red, was a bronze medalist in Beijing, but failed to make the 2012 games in London because of injuries. Many thought he was done, but not Oliver, and certainly not Brooks Johnson, who led him all the way back, beating what may be the greatest hurdle field in history to win the world championship. And joining us now is the great Brooks Johnson. And Brooks, congratulations.
Thank you.
Just
thank
phenomenal. You, you know, what did you have to do to get him back? And I know you've told us before that you're the guy who knows how to push the go button. What go button did you push on David?
Well, David is a very proud guy. And despite the fact that even in his off years, he was never ranked lower than three, he'd gotten used to being number one, and he wanted it. And that pride and drive and discipline allowed him to get it.
It's such a technical race, and if you have said in the past, David is not the greatest athlete in the field. He's got to be a perfect technician, and he certainly seemed to put it all together.
Well, that's right. The hurdles, yeah. The 110 hurdles or the 100 hurdles for the women, is the most technical event in track and field because you got 11 opportunities to mess it up, one at the start and 10 hurdles after that. So you have to be not only technically good, you have to be technically consistent.
All right, enough about David Oliver. Let's talk about Brooks Johnson. We love you because literally athletes beat a path to come train with you from all over the world, and that is almost unheard of. Shouldn't be, but it is. You know, a guy gets to be near 80, and kids are always looking for the new coach, the next thing. They have one bad race, and they want to run for somebody else. What is it about you, Brooks, that has enabled you to remain not only relevant, but at the top of your game at your age?
I've always been blessed with being able to coach at very attractive places, St. Albans High School in Washington, D.C., the University of Florida, Stanford University, and now at Disney's and ESPN's Wide World of Sports. So the venues have always been outstanding. And that, coupled with talent, will produce results. And winners find a way to win, losers find a way to lose, and winners will find a place that they need to go to in order to win.
Well, you're a humble man, but there's got to be more than that. Give us a takeaway for people that are out there in their 60s and 70s and think life has passed them by. What can we learn from you?
I made a promise to myself years ago that for every minute I was alive, I wanted 60 seconds worth of living. And that's been basically the mantra ever since.
Do you enjoy it as much now as you used to? Do you find life as fulfilling, challenges as intriguing?
Yeah. You enjoy it in different ways. You recognize that things that you used to take for granted now are more difficult. And overcoming them, because it's a bigger challenge, gives you a greater reward. So you have to sort of readjust and be like a jazz musician. You have to improvise on the fly. You know what the chord pattern is. You know what the melody is, but you have to continue to improvise.
You just keep doing it. You know, Brooks, I don't know anymore what 80 looks like because we have so many cool people on this program. You certainly do not look it. Do you feel it?
Yeah, in certain ways I do, but in certain ways I don't. It's you know, ache here, a pain there. But basically, you just keep focused on what you're trying to do.
And keep doing it. We are big fans. We'll continue to follow you. Folks, he is the great Brooks Johnson, smashing stereotypes and helping America's greatest continue to compete on the world stage in track and field.
How about that? An interview from the Growing Boulder TV show. Great job. And Mark, what I loved about Brooks Johnson the most, what a great example he is of growing Boulder. You know, he's one of those guys, if you bump into him on the street, you might think, okay, maybe 60, 65 tops, but never 80.
Yeah, and that's because he, for the most part, Bill, lives in a world that is not about age. He pursues his passion every day. He hangs out with younger people every day. He continues to study his trade every day. He travels. He's part of a big social network in track and field. Check, 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 and check. He embodies all of the keys to active longevity.
Up next, the man behind one of the greatest rock bands in history, the legendary Brian Wilson. This is Growing Boulder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Boulder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Their 1966 album, Pet Sounds, which, by the way, Paul McCartney has called his favorite album ever, and it's been universally hailed as one of the finest records of the 20th century.
Yeah, the song, like so many of the Beach Boy classics, is the work of Brian Wilson, the creative musical genius and co-founder of the band. Wilson is responsible for some of the most groundbreaking and timeless popular music ever recorded. And of course, his turbulent life story has been well documented, from an abusive father to the tragic loss of his brothers to drug addiction and mental illness. And through it all, he remains a music force who is still recording, still touring, and still thrilling join his millions of fans worldwide. Welcome to the program, the legendary Brian Wilson. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Man, we're doing great, and it seems like you are as well. You're in the midst of a world tour. Brian Wilson presents Pet Sounds, in which you and Al Jardine and your band performed the album for a final time in honor of its 50th anniversary. What's it like touring as you approach your 75th birthday?
Well, it's still a fun experience for me. I still like to sing and, you know, play and sing on stage and share the spotlight with Al Jardine and Blondie Chaplin.
And Mark said that you're about to turn 75. Brian, can you believe that? What does it feel like to be 74?
Well, it feels good.
Since your tour is all about Pet Sounds, it is now considered, you know, hindsight is 2020, a timeless masterpiece, decades ahead of its time, the forebearer of the conceptual album. But when it was released in 1966, it was met largely with a lukewarm reception from the critics. Were you bothered by that as a 24-year-old?
No, I knew that people weren't going to like it right off the bat. But I knew that after a few years, people would start to like it.
That's amazing, Brian. I would think at that young age that it would be so important to get that critical buy-in. Maybe not as important as now, but that would have crushed, you know, would have crushed anybody else.
Well, I think when people first hear it, they like the harmonies. I think after a few plays, then they start to like the lyrics.
And then they just love every little bit of it. You know, not only are you a musical icon, it turns out you're a pretty darn good writer as well. Your second book, the very revealing I Am Brian Wilson, a memoir, came out a few months ago. In it, Brian, you are very open, talking about, among other things, the abuse you suffered at the hands of your father, your substance abuse, and even your mental illness, which has now been clinically diagnosed as bipolar schizoaffective disorder. Do you still hear the voices, what you've described as auditory hallucinations that have troubled you for decades? Are they still there?
Yeah, they're still there. Not quite as much, but they're still there.
You know, one of the reasons we love your story, Brian, and we're so proud of the courage that you've had to go public with what you've been through, is we all in our lives fight some kind of demons. They may not be the same as yours, but there's a great lesson in your ability to fight back, to be courageous and to overcome. What made you decide that you would be an example and you would allow this to go public?
Well, I think the people that saw the movie would probably stop taking drugs after they saw what I went through, you know?
He's talking about the movie Love and Mercy, which was the highly acclaimed biopic that detailed Brian Wilson's relationship with the other band members and, of course, the domineering Eugene Landy. Were you pleased, Brian, with that film and the way in which you were represented?
Yeah, I was very pleased. I thought I was portrayed very accurately, and I thought it came across very good.
You know, Mark was telling me before we were talking about your story, Brian, how much you have endured, far more than even many rock stars of your generation. What has been responsible for your ability to not only survive, but to thrive in the aftermath?
Well, I've had a lot of practice, you know. I've been in the business for 52 or 53 years, so I've had a lot of practice.
Folks, we're talking with Brian Wilson, who has been called a modern-day Mozart, Beethoven, and Tchaikovsky all rolled into one. What do you feel about your place in music, Brian? Do you ever? What do you think when people call you a Mozart or a Beethoven?
Well, I think they're very right. I think I deserve to be called all those.
And, you know, when somebody has the skills you do, Brian, and the creativity, that doesn't seem to go away as we age or get older. Do you still find yourself feeling that creativity, and do you still write songs?
Well, I'm going to start writing songs for my new rock and roll album later this year, which should be a great album.
And a lot of the songs in the past have been like I Love You songs or Gee, Isn't It a Great Day. What will your songs be about now?
Well, I haven't decided yet what to write about, but it will have some love songs and then some just like crazy, like energetic songs, you know, that like make people feel good.
Well, you know, you have made a lot of people feel really good for decades. As we mentioned at the top of this interview, you are still touring with Al Jardine, but your brothers Dennis and Carl have both died, and your relationship with your cousin Mike Love has been strained, to say the least. Have you reconciled, Brian? Do you guys talk at all these days?
I haven't talked with Mike for 4.5 years.
And why is that? Is that your choice or his, or it just hasn't happened?
It just hasn't happened. We haven't wanted to talk to each other for a while. I don't really, I'm not planning to do any more work with Mike, you know.
But yet he's touring as the Beach Boys, and you and Al are really the Beach Boys. Does that bother you at all, or are you beyond that?
I'm beyond that, yeah. I'm beyond that.
Hey, Brian, I don't know if you know this. Well, I'm sure you do. We've had a number of big-time rock stars on our radio program here, and we always like to ask people, you know, who are your influences? Who is it that you respect and admire the most? And do you know that almost every one of them mentions your name?
I can't believe that. Really? Is that really true?
And I think it, you know, it's because you've done things that other people didn't quite have the courage to. I mean, you followed what was in your heart. Where did that courage come from in you?
Came from inside of me, deep inside of me.
You know, we opened this interview with a little bit from the song Wouldn't It Be Nice, and the opening lyric to that song is, "Wouldn't it be nice if we were older?" Now that you are older, Brian, is it nice? Are you enjoying life as much now as you did when you were 24?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what is life like now for you, Brian?
Well, life is like an experience. Each day is like a new challenge for me to survive and get through it. And of course, to listen to music and think about writing songs.
Well, you obviously are a guy who sees the world in many, many layers, you know, a symphonic version, if you will. Is there a Brian Wilson takeaway? Is there something that you have learned from everything you've experienced? What's the moral of your story that you'd like others to know?
Well, my advice to people who write songs is to not write half a song, write a whole song.
And how about life, Brian? You've learned so much about just surviving the ups and downs. What can we learn from what you've been through?
You can learn that you should not take drugs, not take heavy drugs or alcohol or anything. Smoking, no smoking.
You know what we want to do? We want to say a great big thank you to you for the soundtrack of our lives from some of the greatest music any of us has ever heard, and not just because it's nice to listen to, because it helps us open our minds and experience and inspires us to be creative in our own right. He's the musical soul of one of the most enduring rock bands of all time and one of the greatest musical innovators in history, writing masterpieces like Don't Worry Baby, Good Vibrations, Wouldn't It Be Nice, God Only Knows, and so many others. Check out his memoir, Wouldn't It Be Nice? My Own Story. What an interesting interview from a fascinating man.
Coming up next, finding real meaning in daily life after retirement. Our next guest took a big risk at 68, and at 71, she says her life is bigger and better than ever. This is Growing Bold. Stay connected to Growing Boulder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes.
Question for you now. Do you know what you are going to do after you retire? One of the best ways to move forward, we have found, is by giving back. And that's exactly what our next guest has done.
Good point, Bill. She signed up as a volunteer for Habitat for Humanity at the age of 68, doing many things she had never done before her entire life. And now at 71, she's a crew leader and an inspirational role model and having the time of her life helping the less fortunate. Let's find out more as we welcome Beryl Wiltshire. Hey, Beryl, how are you?
Hey, Dave. there. I'm fine, thank you. Good to hear from you.
Man, you are better than fine. We can tell from someone's voice right away if they're going to be a good interview.
And how many times has this happened, Mark? We'll have somebody on the program. It's radio, right? You can't see their. How old does she sound to you?
She sounds like she's 44.
Yeah, maybe 39-ish. It's just.
Hey, that sounds good to me. Keep going, guys.
You know, let's talk about this. Because of the many things to do in retirement, what led you to volunteering in general, and specifically, how did you become involved in Habitat?
Well, volunteering in general is something I've wanted to do for a long time. Came over from England to Orlando, loved it here. But as everyone else has found out, we get loads and loads of visitors, or did the first few years. So I put off volunteering. And then when I really got down to it, I decided I wanted to do something. It was totally different. I've been an office job most of my life, worked in London, worked all around. And this struck me as something that was so completely different outside in the gorgeous weather that you have here. And I gave it a try. And I was hooked very, very quickly.
Now, let me get this straight, though. You had an office job most of your life, and then it's...
I did.
So then you start, you know, you, out of all the places, you pick Habitat for Humanity, and what did you do? Did you, like, paint walls and pull weeds and all that safe little stuff?
Oh, no. Well, I thought that was all I'd be doing, but I go up on the roofs, I tear shingles off. not just me, obviously, a whole group of people. I'm part of a gorgeous group of people. I help put drywall up. I help putting sidings up, and they teach you everything very, very gently, step by step. There's always someone to ask if you have any sort of problem, which I constantly do, but they're just a great bunch of people, and I go out as many Saturdays as I can. In fact, I feel quite guilty when I don't go now on a Saturday. If there's something really important, I can't make it. I feel uncomfortable because I enjoy it so much. I really love it.
Do you have a favorite job, Burl, or is there something you like to do more than anything else?
I do. I love to get up on the roof. it's I know a lot of people laugh at me and look like, what? But it's just empowering when you're up there. You just feel free. And safety is very much an issue, so there's no real problem with that. And I just love it, whether it's tearing them off, laying the paper, the tarry paper stuff. See, I don't know the real names, or putting new shingles down. I just love it up there.
You love it up on the roof, but tell us now about the feeling that you get working on a home in general and helping other people. How does that enrich your life?
It just makes me feel that I'm part of life still, because you can get sort of in the sidetrack when you've retired, but I just feel I'm in there still. I'm giving something to, I'm helping people. I drive back home from there and I just feel really good about myself. And everybody else that I work with feels the same. We're all there, whether it's the crew leaders, the people that actually work for Habitat, or the different volunteers that come out every Saturday, we're all there for the same reason. That's to make this house a home. And I can't explain it any more than that, but it's something incredibly worthwhile. And I would just encourage anyone else to give it a try.
You know, getting to know you here in just 3 minutes or so, it's easy to understand that you have become a crew leader. But how does an older woman with no construction experience become a supervisor in just a matter of a couple of years?
I know, it sounds quite funny, really. Well, you just turn up every Saturday. You learn where the tools are kept. You know all the routine about the safety aspects. It isn't necessarily about what the actual technique of the job, the skills of the job. I mean, that all counts, and you do absorb more than you realize. But it's just making sure people wear their hard hats if necessary, making sure they have safety glasses. Knowing where to direct them to get things for them, it's a whole, like an organizing thing. And I was a legal secretary most of my life, which was a lot of organizing. So I think it comes natural to me in that way. And as always, somebody to ask if there's any question of, I'm not sure if you do this or that, there's always somebody else there to help you. So, and I guess enthusiasm, something you like. And I love it. So I think that comes through when I'm there.
So, Beryl, in your 70s now and volunteering like you do, working with Habitat, what's the takeaway? What can you share with others that you've learned about life?
Just that the more you do for other people, the better you feel about yourself. It's not really giving to them. It's what they give to you, what you get back. I think that's more important than anything else. By just reaching out of yourself, just a fraction, just a little bit to start with, it seems to give you so much more than you give. That's really all I can say, and it just makes me happy to do it. I was very, very nervous when I started. At my age, I thought, am I going to be able to do this? But I watched Rosalind Carter, that's President Carter's wife. I think she's 14 years older than I am, and she was on a TV program, and she was banging nails in, making all sorts of things, and I could see that she could do it and enjoyed it, and that she inspired me to go and give Habitat a try. So that's really what I'd love to do to other people. Don't think, I couldn't do that, because honestly, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And that's absolutely the truth, because I had no experience at all.
Well, let's leave it there, because you have become not only a great community resource, but a tremendous role model for the rest of us. Beryl Wiltshire, thanks so much for all you do for the community, and keep on keeping on, girl. Coming up next, Masters track and field superstar, acrobat, gymnast, dance queen, and more. In fact, she may be the world's greatest female athlete over the age of 60. This is Growing Boulder.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts.
And our next guest is one of the world's top Masters track and field athletes. Now 60, she's the age group world record holder in the women's 55 to 59 year old pole vault. She's also a world class high jumper, hurdler, thrower, and sprinter.
And you know what, Bill? That's not even what she does best.
There's more?
She is also a world class gymnast, acrobat, and dancer. So imagine this. How she felt when a hip problem got so bad, the doctor said she needed a total hip replacement, and that would likely mean the end of the lifestyle that she lived for. Let's find out what happened as we welcome Kay Glenn. Hey, Kay, how are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing great. And let's pick this story up with your hip problem, because doctors diagnosed you with something called hip dysplasia, which ultimately led to arthritis, bone-on-bone contact. You suffered pain. You had a loss in a range of motion. You had to be seeing your career, your lifestyle flashing before your eyes.
Well, that was quite a shock. It took me a few months to get the diagnosis, and I'd been to eventually, I think 7 doctors had seen my x-rays before I finally had the surgery. But, yeah, when I went to the Mayo Clinic and was hoping to have a little arthroscopic surgery done, or there was a tear in there that had to be fixed, just something fixable on a kind of an easy out. But, yeah, when I got there, they said, you need a total hip replacement, and it was just a shock. I was just stunned. I said, can I have a cortisone shot for now and think about it? And they did that, and I went home, and I did a lot of thinking and a lot of research.
Okay, some of the stuff that Mark was talking about you doing, I mean, a couple generations ago, nobody 60 years old is getting involved in all these track and field things. Do you think that contributed to your hip? And if so, is it worth it?
My doctor that did my hip resurfacing said that the cause of arthritis is really kind of unknown, that it didn't make any difference what I had done. He said that he didn't even really think I had enough dysplasia in my hip to even call it that. And he just said that really wasn't an issue. I just had arthritis. And you see heavy people sitting in chairs all their life that get arthritis. So it's not necessarily due to any wear and tear that I've done. It's just something that happens and something you need to deal with. But I, as far as doing it at 60, it's not like I just really picked it up. I had been active since I was 4 years old, and I did all the dancing and acrobatics. So I don't think about it as being old doing this stuff. It's just something that I've always done and part of who I am. So
you mentioned your hip resurfacing, Kay, because that's the next part of this story. As you mentioned early on, you had six doctors who told you you needed a total hip replacement, which, you know, would have worked for walking, but certainly wouldn't have worked for pole vaulting and high jumping. It's really kind of a story about being your own best advocate, because you continue to do research until you found someone that convinced you that there was a procedure that would allow you to return to the level of activity that you enjoyed. When did you have the hip resurfacing? How is it going? And do you still think you can get back to a world-class level of competition?
I had two people that I met through track and field that had actually been to this particular doctor, and they said, before you have anything done, just talk to him. You don't have, and I said, but this is not something they usually do with women, and they don't usually do it with older women, so I can see why it worked for you, but it probably won't for me. And they said, just talk to him. It won't hurt to talk. So that's what I did, and did more of the research. But I had that done in August 21st, so it's been 8 weeks now, and I'm doing well. I'm right on my schedule. I'm trying to listen to my doctor, and I don't have any pain, so it's until 6 months I don't get to do any jogging or any dancing, but I won't have pain during that time, so it's really a discipline thing. You just can't do it because it's going to take that long for tissues and growth to, grow into the implant. So it's just something to look forward to, but that, my doctor said, when I'm done, the difference between this operation and a total hip is that I won't have the limitations that you do for the rest of your life with a total hip. There are just certain movements that you can't make. And my doctor says when I'm completely healed, which is probably going to be a year from the surgery, I can do anything that I ever did, that I ever wanted to do. It's just like it never happened. So I'm going with that.
Now, Kay, when doctors say to most people you can do what you did before, they usually mean like walking around the mall. They don't necessarily mean setting world records. Are you still hopeful that you can return to things like pole vaulting and high jumping? Will we see you breaking world records in the 60 to 64-year-old age group?
Well, you'll definitely see me trying anyway. I don't know whether I can do it or not, but I never did know whether I could do it. All you can do is try. But yeah, I can do go back to running and doing what they say normal people can do in 6 months. There's no limitations. But me, as a unique 60-year-old, I was told that I will have to wait for a year before I do the jumps, which is fine with me. But yeah, I'll slowly but surely, I'll be back there.
And you know, Kay, that is really what is so great about you, because it's men and women like you who are doing things in their 60s that people didn't used to do a decade ago, that are pushing, you know, the whole orthopedic profession, pushing the doctors to develop the kinds of things that will allow us to not only continue doing what we used to do, but to come back and do it again, to have this extreme recovery. So, you know, thank you for pushing the envelope. And folks, you should know that Kay Glenn lives on a farm in Iowa. And until recently, there were high school records in Iowa that she set back in high school that stood up for 40 or 50 years. I mean, well, the most recent one was just broken up not long ago, wasn't it, Kay?
A long jump record was broken by maybe a fourth of an inch.
How long ago?
I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And you have a pole vaulting pit out in a cornfield in your backyard where you practice outside?
Right, I do. I have a high jump pit on one side of the house and a pole vault pit on the other side of the house. And I have some rings in the front yard and the trees and a bar in the backyard and some other trees. So it's kind of like my playground.
And for people who haven't seen you, too, you look like you're 39. I mean, you've got this dazzling blonde hair and it's great figure, and you're still all about it.
I think a lot of my good fortune has really come from being active all my life, and I've loved doing it. And I said, really, the first thing that I'll be able to do when I turn 61 in February and I'm released from my doctor will be to do tap dancing. Mm. That'll be the first activity I plan to go back to. I already have some music picked out for an acrobatic song I want to do. The doctor was very definite about, I said, when can I do a cartwheel? He said, 6 months. When can I jog? 6 months. You know, there was no discussion. There was no compromise. He was just quick and definite in telling me when I could do those things. So that's what I put on my calendar. But I've seen, you know, I've learned not to feel sorry for myself. There's so many people that have such obstacles that, you know, health-wise that they've had to deal with over the years. And sometimes, some days, I'll tell myself, oh, don't be such a wuss. Think of what these other people have to deal with. And they're such an inspiration to me that this seems like pretty minor compared to what a lot of people have to go through. So I won't. They didn't give up, and I'm not going to give up either.
Amen. Let's leave it there because, folks, she is arguably the greatest all-around female athlete in the world over the age of 60. And by refusing to simply stop doing what she loves, she is giving notice to the medical world, to doctors, and medical appliance manufacturers that it is never too late to return to the activity you love, no matter how extreme. Thanks, Kay. We've heard from some pretty impressive people on this program, so now it's time to take a minute to think about you. What's your Growing Bolder story? What do you want it to be? Think about it, craft it, and then find a way to start living it.
Stop trying to define people by their age alone. It's a whole new world out there where it's not about age, it's about attitude, and that's Growing Bolder.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.